hate talking about referees and spinning the wheel of justice for suspensions and that sort of thing, but I don't know what else you do. You talk about the Blues snapping their power play skid and avoid the call at the end of the game. It feels like burying the lead a little bit. Hard not to. It's really unfortunate. It sucks for the St. Louis Blues. The Sharks can't be overly proud of it either. What a mess last night in overtime.
What a charm team the Sharks are, eh? Like, they're getting, like, for everything that's happened to them in their past, they're getting every conceivable good break that could possibly come their way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to stomp on the referees. I'm sure nobody feels worse than those guys. They missed the call. I really do believe, and nobody will convince me differently, that the people in the situation room wanted to call down to the guy in the penalty box and just say, tell them it was a hand pass, but everybody's watching, right?
Yeah.
And I think at times that has happened, but, I bet you in that situation, they just didn't think they could do it or think they could get away with it, even though I think everybody would have agreed that it would have been the right thing to do. We're going to see changes, guys. I don't see any way we can avoid it. And probably it can't happen till the competition committee and the board of governors meet later in June, but I just don't see any way we're going to avoid having some major overhaul to the system after this season.
I guess you, because I know you'd have been there. We talked to Brian Burke about an hour ago, and you with Kelly. I know he was animated about.
My condolences.
I just wonder what that looks like. Brian this morning suggested maybe there's a two-tier system in the playoffs. You review every goal. You allow Toronto to call down, whatever the case may be. Do you have any kind of a feel as to what it should look like if it changes?
Well, last week in my notes, I suggested, you have, first of all, I think we can get rid of the offside review.
Yes.
I think we've learned that they generally call it pretty well, and we're splitting the onion here. Unless it's like Matt Duchene blatant, don't call it. I suggested, coaches get two challenges a game. And you can challenge whatever you want, puck over glass, a teammate high stick another teammate instead of an opponent, maybe hand pass to a goal, whatever. You get to challenge two things you want, and if it's wrong, it's a penalty, and if it's right, you keep your challenges. And I had a coach text me last night and say, I get the idea that you want some penalty if you get it wrong, but he said, isn't this incumbent on the league to make sure it's right? So, look, the situation room, like if you look at the two calls from that game last night, the puck over the glass and the hand pass, how fast could the situation room have changed those calls?
Instantly. Yeah.
And we know now, people forget, they do review every goal now. Not for what happened last night.
Yeah.
They check every goal. And do we ever have really long delays while they check? Not really. They've got the great technology there. I don't even know if you think it's two-tiered. Like, just the puck goes in on a play like that, or the puck goes over the glass, and while the officials are talking, they review it, and they call down to the guy in the penalty box, and he calls him over and says, guys, hand pass, no goal.
Can't they just put an earpiece in the ref? Like, go right to the ref.
I'll tell you, Rhett, I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago. I was listening to a podcast. Michael Lewis, who wrote Blindside and Moneyball, he has a new podcast out right now. And in the first episode, he talked to the guy who's the NBA's supervisor of replay review. And he said that they found out from the U.S. Army, that the U.S. military command, they created something that goes on, something that fits on their soldiers' teeth, so that when they're in the battlefield, they, through that, whatever that is, chip on the tooth, they can communicate with central command. And they tried that with their referees in what's called the G League, which is the NBA's American Hockey League.
Yeah.
And the referees found it too confusing. They didn't know who was yelling at them. And they said, wait a second, is that a coach yelling at us, or is that someone else yelling at us? But whether you want to use Bluetooth technology or an earpiece or whatever you want it to do, we're getting close to the point where, yes, you can do all of that. But to me, at the end of the day, the people who have the best technology are the people in the situation room. The NBA, Major League Baseball, and the NFL all copied what the NHL did with the situation room. I know the referees will hate having that much control taken out of their hands, but unfortunately, we're learning in these playoffs, it probably needs to happen.
Why do they hate it so much, though? Like, I mean,
it saves them embarrassment, if anything.
Do they not hate looking like a heel right now? Like,
well, I think absolutely they would hate looking like a heel, but, you know, I'm sure, like, that's why I don't want to stomp on them. I'm sure these guys feel terrible. Like, you know those referees, when they went into the room last night and, you know, with Doug Armstrong banging on the door, they're probably looking at the replays and they're going, oh, my God, and nobody felt worse than them. But it's like, you know, how would you feel if your program director was telling you every question that you had to ask me? You'd hate it. But unfortunately, that's what happens.
Yeah, but I ask good questions. That's kind of different.
Let's have a Twitter poll on that one.
And I'm not mad at the refs. I mean, it's disappointing, but I do think the refs get it right, like, all the time.
And I disagree. I think I would, if I'm a ref, I would have a greater sense of relief if I made a mistake on it. Wouldn't you rather? Wouldn't you rather be sitting in that room after and be like, why I didn't see it?
Why is the league saying,
honestly, guys, as a guy who's made one really horrendous broadcasting mistake, at least in my career, in that moment, I would have loved it if somebody had said to me, hey,
help me out here.
Yeah, I get it. I totally get it.
What if they would have last night? What if Toronto, and again, it's hypothetical, because the only people that could complain would have been the Sharks, who would say,
I don't even think they would have complained.
I don't either.
Right? Because that would fall on deaf ears if they were going to put up the stink that's a non-reviewable call.
Rhett, you're a player. You know what it's like to get a fortunate call. If someone would have overruled that call, you would have smiled and said, I wish there was still no review.
I was in Buffalo, Elliot.
Oh, of course. Yeah, you're right. Of course. I mean, that's the thing. Like you saw how Thornton was when that puck over glass wasn't called in the set period. Like, you know, you think he's going to complain about that? I mean, even Pavelski said of the Game 7 penalty, we're lucky that they called it that way, but it shouldn't have been a penalty. Like, I mean, players understand. They get it. Like, they know when the call's right and they know when the call's wrong.
Let's move on, because I think you're right. I think we're going to get a bunch of change, and it's going to be reevaluated, and next year will be different, and hopefully we don't see any more, have to have any more conversations about right or wrong calls the rest of the way through. How do the Blues bounce back?
Well, the one thing is, I like some of their quotes. Like, I saw Perron say, you got to forget it and you got to move on. I saw someone else say that too. You know, one of the things that I really believe is, you don't get to this far in the playoffs without knowing how to handle some adversity, right? And has any team done a better job this year in the league of handling adversity than the St. Louis Blues? They were dead last 2 days into the new year. And look where they are. I mean, they'll be mad. They'll channel it the right way. They'll move on. I think they'll be fine. You know, to be honest, guys, last night, it was 3-1. That game should have been over. Tarasenko's goal woke them up. Like, I didn't think St. Louis could get into shootouts with San Jose. They should have won that game last night. And I'll tell you guys something, too. Like, I'm looking at Carlson. They are beating the hell out of him. They beat up Braun last night. And I'm curious to see if that one Blay hit is going to come up for any supplementary discipline. I mean, they are taking a physical piece of the Sharks. And unlike the East Series, which couldn't come to an end tonight, I think this one is far from over.
Are you at all concerned? I don't think he was the worst goalie last night. I think Jones obviously let him kind of softer. But Billington...
He loves calling him Craig Billington, just on the record.
He's giving up more goals. I mean, they got in because he was phenomenal and was giving up one or two goals a game. He's starting to give up four goals a night. I mean, I still think he's making some saves, but is that a concern at all that maybe there's some fatigue?
Well, you know, I wonder about that. You know, first of all, I know Jones didn't have a great night last night, but I thought in the third period he saved San Jose's life. You know, I thought I really liked that. I thought he really bounced back and played well. You know, the one thing I'm looking at in these playoffs, Red, is, okay, so more teams are now like, okay, we got to platoon our goalies, okay? So what happens when these guys get tired? Like, I thought the Islanders should have started Greiss instead of Lanner in the last game. You know, I think that I really like what Brind'Amour did, starting McElhinney. Like, when you have platoons, you got to, like, you know, guys are going to run out of steam. I think Binnington has been really good. And the other thing I think about Binnington also, Red, is that when he tends to get smoked, he comes back big. Yeah. Like, look at his numbers after he gives up 4 or 5 goals in a game. He's really good. But you're right. I do wonder about that. He's never played this much, and at some point it's got to catch up to you. But his bounce-back numbers generally, though, have been exceptional.
Was that Robin Regier making a turn in the background there? Was that... The big battleship?
Or Pat Maroon.
Yeah. So Ralph Kruger is back in the National Hockey League. You had the drop on that. I guess take us through how that came, because he has been away for a long time.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, Buffalo interviewed him the last time the job was open in 2017. And, you know, it's funny, like, one of the things I've thought about a lot is the connection between the Bottles and the Krugers. And I believe they have a cottage on the same lake in Manitoba. And I believe that Dr. Cal Bottle, Jason's father, who's taught at the University of Manitoba for a long time, and Ralph knew each other. And I believe they also shared the same agent, Kruger and Jason Bottle, when Jason played the late Don Baisley. Now, they downplayed that yesterday. I was a little bit surprised to hear that, and I started looking into it a bit more. And, you know, one thing I started to hear a bit more last night is I think the Pegulas, the owners, were very involved in this one too. And I think they had a big hand in going with Kruger. I understand why Buffalo was doing this. They went conventionally with their last two hires, a guy who had a Stanley Cup, Dan Bylsma, a really hot assistant, Phil Housley. Knew they worked for them, and now they're starting to look at something a little bit different. You know, Kruger is, the thing about Kruger is that he is very good at, he's very good at empowering people and getting people to believe in themselves. He is going to need a tactician next to him. That is going to be the key hire. They have to get a tactician next to him. And I'm very curious to see who that's going to be. Because I think that's going to be very important. You know, one of the things, I had a long talk with someone last night. One of the things Buffalo is going through right now is figuring out Rasmus Ristolainen. And, you know, he's a talented guy who had a nightmare year. And the Sabres think that the man-to-man system that they used was a big factor in that. If that's the case, they're going to have to fix it. I think also there's been a dark cloud over that organization for a long time. That's going to be a tough one for them to fix too. And that's why I think they went to Kruger. They're going to try to go positive vibes and see if this works.
In a way, it's weird because he's been gone for so long. I was kind of surprised that it took that long because of all places, Edmonton fired him, but he seemed well-liked by the team. His performance as coach was some of the best work that they'd had there. And go figure, the guy that fired him on Skype is off to the KHL. But nonetheless,
yeah.
I was just kind of surprised that if you could have good vibes in Edmonton, where it's been so negative, imagine what you could do somewhere else.
Well, you know, and that's true. I think that's very fair. Like, I wonder if they're going to go for a guy like Mike Vellucci. I think he's leaving Charlotte this year as an assistant. They're in the Calder Cup semifinals. And he's the coach of the year there in the American Hockey League. They're playing Toronto. I wonder if that's the kind of the guy they go to for who has a good reputation as a tactician, someone like that. But I do agree. Like the thing about Kruger is, if you spend any time around him, he is relentlessly positive. He's like, you've been around those people your whole life. You're like, okay, I'm in a bad mood today. Get the hell away from me. Make me sick how happy you are. He's one of those guys. Yeah. And I do think Buffalo needs that, no question.
He's one of those guys in this room. sitting right beside me, Elliot.
Who's that?
That's Peter Klein.
Oh, for...
Oh, Peter, that's good. Good to see you're one of those guys. Yeah, man.
Yeah. Mr. Positive.
Because Rhett and Dean are so negative all the time.
That's it's tough in here. It is tough to be like that in here, but just keep trudging forward.
Shut up, right? Peter. Okay. Craig
Peter, don't let them tear you down, man.
Were you
stand up for yourself.
Were you surprised to see Craig McTavish go to the KHL?
I was. Just because I didn't, you know, sometimes you have inklings of these things and sometimes you don't. I know that that was a job that before he got hired in Philadelphia, I believe Michelle Therrien was in the market for that one. I think that was probably going to be his, and then he got the job in Philly. I know McTavish loves to coach, and you know, I think what will come out over the next couple of days is this a sign that things are going to be changing in Edmonton? Maybe he felt they were. Maybe the team felt there needed to be a change. I know McTavish loves to coach.
Yeah.
And I think it's been hard, and I hope it works out well for him. I like Craig a lot. I think that we all know that there had to be some changes in Edmonton.
Yeah, I think you're bang on both. I think that probably is an indicator of what's going on in Edmonton. And I was around that team for a year, not a lot, but still when McTavish was coaching, and it was not good. And he does love coaching, which is why I was kind of surprised. I just assumed he'd given up the pursuit because he'd been away from coaching, even as an assistant somewhere for so long.
Yeah, I agree. I was surprised when I came across Twitter this morning. Like, I was shocked. I was like, wow, okay. But you know, I think that, you know, like, as you know, Dean, like, we reach points in our lives where we need change and we need to try new things. Maybe he wondered if that decision was going to be made for him, and he just decided to go before he was pushed. I don't know, but you know, I mean, I just hope it's a good thing for him, because I think we all recognize change is coming to Edmonton. Change needs to come to Edmonton, and good for him for finding a soft landing.
Anything else you're hearing? Just buzz around the National Hockey League away from the on ice product.
You know, I think, you know, teams are starting to have their scouting meetings. I think we're going to start to hear about players becoming available. You know, I wrote this week, I think one of the guys that people are really curious about is Minnesota's plans for Jared Spurgeon. He's got one more year as an unrestricted free agent. I think some teams would really love to have him if Minnesota makes him available. I think that that's going to be one thing that is going to be an interesting one. You know, I think over the next few days, we're going to start to hear some bit about, you know, players who might start to become available. I have been told that there's going to be a lot of interesting names. I mean, we've already had Malkin's name out there, although some guys think that might get pulled back. But, you know, guys have told me there's going to be some interesting names available. And, you know, what might happen and what actually does happen could be two very different things. But there's going to be some teams out here looking to wheel and deal. There's no question about that.
Well, it kind of struck me as odd yesterday, and maybe not for you because you're in this process every day. We're halfway through the month of May, and it's going to be halfway through the month of June, and we're going to be talking the draft and free agency. It's all coming so very quickly. I can't believe we're going to be talking the draft here in a month.
Yep.
Say hi to Regeer for us.
Yeah, I'm sitting outside of a Starbucks with a buddy, and some of these people are just terrible parkers. I can't believe this.
Yeah.
You know what? And it's going to be a wild time because, you know, this is going to be an interesting draft. I mean, Chicago, I've heard they've been scouting Byram pretty heavily. And, you know, there were some teams who wondered if they would not take a D because they've taken D in the first round the last 2 years. But I'm a big believer in you take the best player and you sort it out. And, they've been scouting Byram pretty heavily, at least getting their looks in on him. And
yeah.
I think in a lot of ways, the draft really starts at three. And the Russian kid who might not be able to come over for 2 or 3 years, but he's really talented. It's going to be a wild couple of months. Are you guys going to be at the draft?
Someone will. I don't know.
I'll come hobnob with you.
Warner's going to go.
Wait a second. Rhett, you're going to work in June? I find this hard to believe.
I don't think it'll be work. Really.
You know what it is? Station, just getting the vibe out there.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. That's a good thing to do.
Yeah. Contact that NBA guy about one of those tooth microphone things, and I need you to wear it during the panel because I got to smarten you up every once in a while.
Could you imagine, like, if we started barking through my teeth? That would be great if the microphones would pick that up. Don't freaking say that, Friedman.
Yeah, it would be good. Hey, thanks for coming on. Enjoy your Friday. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
It's a pretty good Regeer shot, by the way.